Capricorn, connect. People, potential, technology.
Professor Dr. Katrin Kind is a pioneering technologist and C-suite executive operating at the intersection of quantum computing, artificial intelligence, and industrial scale engineering. We will talk in our latest podcast episode about quantum computing and what impact will AI have on us. Professor Dr. Katrin Kind, thank you so much for joining us in the podcast. How are you today?
Yes, thank you so much for the invitation. So actually quite excited to be here and also have the chance to have the discussion with you, because the topic also of finding what would be new interesting career paths is also dear to me, particularly as I'm a mentor for the younger generation.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really excited to get your insights also because you are at the forefront of quantum computing, of the new revolution AI technology at this intersection. So I would like to start the conversation by asking you, what kind of impact will AI have on us?
If you look at what it's already happening since the democratization of AI, OpenAI made it cool for everybody. And before, AI has existed already since early the 1950s. But the only difference was, back then we didn't have the computing performance that we have now. So that's the only difference. And we also didn't have the ability and the technology to also show through graphics, through videos, the capability of what was already theoretical math back then. Or there were some already early concepts. So even when I started back in the 90s, and in my early career, I started surfing the internet with what people don't even ever maybe have heard of. It was called Mosaic. And back then, it was a big deal, because we were able then to bring graphics and sound and videos to web pages, which before it was just text. And nobody remembers that because they didn't hear that. And then came Netscape, which got completely eaten by AOL, and then Internet Explorer through Microsoft, and then the rest is history. And I'm bringing this, to answer your question, as an analogy as what is happening with AI. So once OpenAI created a very easy platform for everybody to be able then to have access and see the capabilities of AI, everybody started using their imagination, and it's an incredible thing, about the immense possibilities of use cases. Then they started using and implementing it. We even saw Microsoft itself jump into the table and also built it in. They gave us such a tremendous bet on bringing it inside, calling it Copilot, but it's of course then ChatGPT what's behind, with certain guide rails and of course an industrialization guidelines for Microsoft and regulations. Nevertheless, people were able to see, well, now I can do something by myself. I don't need to have a computer science degree. I don't need to be a data scientist. I don't need to be a data engineer, etc.
So me as a user.
Me as anyone. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you, a baker, a doctor, anybody now can see and think, well, I have problem A and now I can solve it using AI. So the situation, what it is not what will happen to us, it's what's already happening now. So we see now the change with every single industrial revolution. And when new technology comes that automates repetitive tasks, a lot of jobs get displaced. Yeah, with the first industrial revolution, with the steam engine, we saw a lot of people losing their jobs. Then electricity came, same story. And so then cars came, and then of course there were less horses. And back then, there were even people thinking, well, a car will never, ever, ever become something that everybody would use. And I'm talking late 19th century. And imagine right now. So what we see with AI is the same principle. The fourth industrial revolution, in that a lot of repetitive jobs are being displaced. And it is a problem, but it's also a big opportunity. Because we were not made to do what would be typical tasks, routine tasks all the time. Sometimes, some portion of our day, yes, and it gives you security or we feel good. but for advancing who we are, for also our own development, even let's say after we finish a job and we claim to retire, now with AI, anybody can see a problem in their community or a problem for themselves or society and use AI to solve it. And yes, there's going to be, for example, already some what would be discussions in the USA that say 40% of the people are going to be displaced through AI. Mm-hmm. I see myself, a lot of youngsters are having trouble or issues finding a job in India, where I'm also a guest professor, because a lot of what was before the task of a typical data engineer, of a particular coder, and I say data engineer coder and not computer scientist or software engineer, those are now being taken by AI. And there is the other extreme that someone says in the USA, and I'm going to quote names, that AI will completely displace all jobs, that we will be needing a universal basic income, which that's too extreme, which I very much disagree. Yes, a big portion will be gone and it's already being displaced. But what we can do from here is see, okay, well, the person that had a coach and horses, that person had to learn, or his children had to learn, to drive a car. So it's exactly what we can do now. And in the 90s and in the 00s, people had to learn how to use a computer. Whoever didn't have those particularly PC skills was displaced in the job market. So that is a new chance that everybody now can learn for free, which is a huge opportunity. And I think that's fantastic, that even people that are coming from what would be a humble level of society have now that access to immense amount of information, to a new type of career. And that's why I tell my students, the typical job roles, they're going to be moved out and new work is coming. So they say, well, I love data. Yes, I myself, call myself a data mad scientist. And what I tell them is that the job role, for example, of the future is not going to be the data engineer. It's going to be the data pruner, meaning the person deleting the data out of models. Because there's that wrong idea that models are like cakes, in that once you put the eggs, when you put the sugar, you cannot extract it back. It's not the case with AI models. And with data becoming proprietary, with data becoming IP, or for also security reasons, also data needs to be taken out of models. So data pruning is what is necessary. And the same thing with AI is that you have around hundreds of thousands of different mathematical algorithms. And AI is nothing without the data. If you look at ChatGPT, to go back to it, its core algorithm is 70 kilobytes. So I can put it in a README file using .txt. But what really makes it powerful is just the petabytes of data was used to be trained, and also the other training models that are giving context, that are creating what would be a particular task. So the agentic other models in mathematics, or on the creation of what would be pictures or videos that had been connected to it, which is the ecosystem behind. But the core mathematics is really that small, which shows that we still need the people to create the data. That means data needs to be organic for AI to evolve, and to be able to be validated, to keep the quality that it has. And if not, it would fail, which we call model collapse. So when people learn that, that's why I tell them, please, youngsters, or anyone actually, learn mathematics, learn material engineering. We don't have all the semiconductors that we need for the future. We don't have not resolved all the data management and particular architectures that we need for the future. Also, please study what would be philosophy, which is...
Why philosophy?
Because one particular type of intelligence AI will never have, and I can tell any big model, we can have a good chat about it, and even the ones who claim that AGI already exists. First is the definition of intelligence. And there's not just one. It's not just cognitive intelligence, yeah, that allows us to have mathematical, logical, what would be the skills. It's also memorial intelligence. Those two, as humans, we share with computers, even artificial intelligence, be it physical intelligence, robotics. Then comes emotional intelligence. That, yes, there are some advances, yeah, being in research on claiming it could be possible, but I still say it's just simply a data pattern learning and not true emotional intelligence, because that also involves human instinct, which is based on our own chemicals, hormones, mm-hmm. and millions of years of evolution, which I very much challenge anyone to really prove mm-hmm. that to me. But yes, there's the appearance of. And then there is metacognition. What do I mean by that? That is the ability that we have as humans to fantasize, to meditate, using our imagination when we close our eyes and create something completely new. Mm-hmm. And that is, some humans have proven through their geniuses like Van Gogh, like Bach, like Mozart, created from nothing something beautiful, something incredible. Mm-hmm. And that is an intelligence that only humans have. So that metacognition cannot be trained into artificial mm-hmm. intelligence, because it doesn't have that particular ability. And even today, we do not understand 100% how our particular subconscious and the entire instinct as well as metacognition level exists. So a philosopher, and I also was going to expand it to psychologists, etc., humanists, are able then to bring those new perspectives as to what is what, let's say, would be the ethical ways, and by ethical ways I mean human rights charter from the UN. Yeah? I know there's different types of ethics. But the important thing is, when we see a risk through AI, yeah, that it gets puts in place, so just as regulation, but built into the particular technology. When there is a need for evolution, that there is also what would be the new structures that we will need. It's not just technology. It's a societal change. It's an educational change. It's also a governmental change. And it's also, of course, a cultural change. And in the Western world that we live in, we are privileged that we are online. Yeah, but there are still over good, I say, 1/18th of the planet that's offline. And for them, yeah, we need to figure out a way, or they can figure out a way, mm-hmm. how to bring them into the digital world so that they don't get left behind.
Mm-hmm. Catherine, I also want to talk about these positive outcomes of this new technology and opportunities. So what are opportunities, let's say I have to prepare myself to get fit for the job market or to stay relevant in this new world. So what do you suggest? What are your recommendations for people? What do they have to learn or train? You said empathy is still important, dealing with people. Maybe you can elaborate a little bit more on that.
Yes, and at the World Economic Forum, where I'm also part of, core member, so Global Future Councils for Data Foundation, we made a particular study about the skills after 2030. And yes, the basic ones are particularly logical thinking. And it is incredible about the amount of time we no longer spend writing or doing maths by hand. And that is one very important skill. And that is, let's say, the areas, those typical logical, critical mm-hmm. thinking, emotional, what would be then intelligence and collaboration structures, and creating a culture of growth. That means if we were able to build what we've done through a competitive environment, yeah, all the way to the late century, we will only be able to survive and transform ourselves if we learn, instead of having a competition, support each other in order to bring new type of what would be, let's say, work structure or societal structures. What I mean by that is that whenever I cultivated, for example, an empathy, and I help create a human-centric AI that can help the elderly, or that can help someone that feels isolated without worrying, okay, the AI is going to create something negative for me, which we've seen such cases.
Yeah.
That means that person ensures and proves the logic, proves the structure, and what we call exploratory testing. Out of what in the systems engineering type we see, the user type of M plus M human type cases to push the AI to its limits, if there might be issues with it and how they can be validated and corrected, or to say, yes, in this particular use cases, it is, let's say, working as it's meant. So it's the intended function is fulfilled. So when someone has precisely those capabilities, yes, so critical thinking, philosophical thinking, mathematical ability, writing skills, as well as verbal expression, and we don't let AI make us dumber. I see with myself that I use too much the grammar AI correction word, and I sometimes stop to think, do I put a comma here in German or in English? Or, and I stop thinking, I said, no, I have to go back to knowing punctuation. I cannot delegate
to basics,
it.
Back to basics. But isn't there a danger? Because it seems like people nowadays, they forget how to read. Nobody reads books anymore. So what does it do to a human being, like if you don't read anymore and actively work with texts, for example? What do you think about it?
I wanted to tell you later on, but there's two gentlemen in the United States that made what it is a cognition analysis research about the positives of the brain development of children and adults if they continue reading and writing by hands. And it's the one and best still what would be methodology for ensuring that our brain develops or that it prevents Alzheimer's. So the thing that happens is very simple, atrophy.
And what does that mean again, atrophy?
Atrophy means that your brain loses the ability to create neuronal connections. Mm-hmm. Our brain is a computer, it's a biochemical computer. So whenever you lose what would be a connection, which happens mm-hmm. when you do something. So if you want to, let's say, build a new connection, do two things that are uncategorized to be the same. For example, go mm-hmm. jogging and learn a language. So you're using two mm-hmm. different sections mm-hmm. of your brain. So by doing that, yeah, what happens is that then you, and there can be seen on the microscope, those particular neurons start trying to find each other, and it creates a path, and that path gets sequenced by different what would be electrical mm-hmm. pulses, and it creates that section. That means that at the beginning it's very difficult, which is good, mm-hmm. and if it feels strange or you feel some maybe having a headache, mm-hmm. some people do, you do it extreme at the beginning and it's too new, it's good. Because it's showing those areas of mm-hmm. your brain are forming those new connection paths. So it helps create new neural connections, but also new neurons. Yeah, so that can be replaced if everybody drinks alcohol mm-hmm. or maybe they did some stuff they shouldn't mm-hmm. in their youth. There yeah. is still hope. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But in the point here regarding children that have not had mm-hmm. those problems yet, they really have the chance to, let's say, develop their different type of intelligences. Yeah? So what would be the cognitive aspect of it? Emotional intelligence can only be developed through social interaction. There are some theoretical parts one can learn, but that it has to be direct connection with humans. But in that cognitive path, once that's stopped, it really, let's say, makes things that shouldn't have been difficult for us. Mm. As I mentioned, the example with punctuation. Yeah, before I knew all the rules of punctuation in English very well, and now I confuse them with German. And that's one thing that I have to go back and reread them. Mm. I do use AI, it gave me a cheat sheet. Mm. I have to remember both. Mm. So
you get lazy also after a while.
And you get very lazy. Yeah. Mm. And that is one of the things that, it can become dangerous. Mm. I develop autonomous driving functions in my 23 years of careers in automotive, and I help create what would be the ACC stop and go back in 2004. Mm. before anybody knew what an AI agent was, before anybody knew what a data scientist was. So I was sitting in the car, training it with a laptop and showing it to understand what is what would be conventional traffic laws, what is the right distance, etc. And one of the things is, once it became, let's say, validated for the street, and I was driving still that BMW, I would be on a traffic, I would put it on. But at some point in time, I forgot that I have to brake. And some lady passed really fast with me with her bike, and I thought the car was going to stop, but I forgot it was on. And then as I fell, the car was continuing. I immediately went and put my leg on the brake. And that's when I realized the dangers of getting used to. And that's why even I have a car and it has automatic park control, I park manually.
So would you recommend getting a little bit off social media and all those tools and then get back to reading again? Is that something you would...
I'm back to doing everything. Like I said, drive your car as manually as possible. Go and really try to do an offline day. At my daughter's school, and I find this fantastic, they even go as far as offline week, which is impossible. But we do have a day that we're completely offline in the weekend. And we sit down as a family, we play games, we cook together the day before. And so on the Fridays is we cook all together, mobile phones off, I grab them and I put them away. And they get back again on the Sunday. And then on the Saturday, we also read together, we sing, and then we take the dog for a walk around the corner. And be conscious to be together. Because we've been, I saw some of our holiday pictures, and the three of us were all watching our phone. And that was taken by a friend of ours that was with us. And I find that horrible. The time that there should be to be together, we're giving it to a phone.
Yeah, distraction. Katrin, quantum computing, that's such a fancy word. What does that actually mean?
It means using what would be quantum mechanics and all their properties to be able then to produce a mathematical digital result. And from those, that's good that you bring that up. I'll just like to shortly explain what they are. There's several architectures. I like to put them into two categories. Cryogenic, that means that the main core of the architecture needs to be at almost absolute zero and can be used using superconductors, so the properties of superconductor metals, or photonic based. And room temperature, which are more sustainable, which is the one that I research and develop at my university, at my company. And those come into what I call also different flavors. Yeah, so of course there's also superconducting. There's photonic, which is the one that we're looking at very carefully. There's also what would be then CMOS based and also hard NV diamond. And all those fancy words are nothing else but the different types that you can have at room temperature. And if you look at conventional computers, von Neumann computers, architecture was created in 1945. That means we're still using computers that are that old. And quantum computing technology was, let's say, created very recently in comparison. Yeah, so there were some, of course, quantum mechanics theories in the 60s, 70s, and in the 80s was the first time that a first architecture came out to be. And the way it works is a computer has either electricity or not. So I have a bit or not. Yeah, but both those states can be read as a bit of data. And a quantum computer, what it does is that you give an electrical stimulus to what would be a photon or what would be the electron in a metal, and it can contain both. So what happens is that they're having all states at the same time. So instead of just being 0 and 1, they're 0 and 1s at the same time, which is what we call superposition. And entanglement is that they are, so to say, brought in together, and they're packed through also what it's called a mathematical probability or determinism, but also what would be the last measurement check. So what happens? And one very important thing, even though they're there, they can only solve certain problems. Mm-hmm. They still cannot create a YouTube. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just still cannot watch mm-hmm. films on quantum computers. They are just for certain use cases, like cybersecurity, for example, chemical simulations, mm-hmm. yeah, or simulations that require tremendous amount of data, yeah, complex data, and need a result very fast. So they're very performant. Nevertheless, they have the problem that they are still not very reliable. That means depending on the type of algorithm that you're using with them, sometimes they can be as having as much as 40% of the time errors mm-hmm. for certain algorithms. And let's say in cryogenic and in photonic, room temperature can be 30%, which is still a big number, but it is much less because you get rid of the cryogenic complexity mm-hmm. out of the equation. But what you can do is that on the paths that you know it's working right, you still need to have what it is high-performance computers, so GPUs, TPUs, mm-hmm. that are measuring it. Yeah? They are also having the architecture. Yeah? So they have a virtual architecture and create a simulation of a quantum computer. So it's not a quantum computer, it's quantum-inspired. And it's like it's digital twin to check if you give it 1 plus 1 equals 2 yeah, or 0.90 plus 0.001 equals really also 2. Equals 1, then you know it's working right. But if there's some type of noise, so a problem, an error, then that area of the measurement or that particular equation mm-hmm. you cannot trust. So the way that they work together is that it allows us yeah, to solve problems that before were impossible because the current quantum computer cannot do that. And most of the computers, yeah, they are all usually at universities. Yeah, here in Zurich, we have one here in ETH, and there is one being built in Basel. Yeah. And the size of them, the maximum size so far has been proven to be stable, in which you can also run an AI algorithm with mm-hmm. almost 97.8%. What would be then accuracy, that means the quality of the execution measure was mm-hmm. that. That still doesn't mean it's reliable. You for that need a recall, which means that you give it the same question all the time and it gives you the same answers all the time. That's the recall metric that we're still trying to prove. It's still up to 100 qubits, which is around 10,000 of the factor in speed to conventional TPU. Mm-hmm. Yeah? So it's a technology that is evolving very fast. Yeah? Through right now the rise of AI, and so through and high-performance computing. So when we combine them both, right now what we see are new type of use cases that we can do, particularly, let's say, the development of new drugs or the development of what I call personalized medicines. That means I could create an algorithm that sequences your DNA, the DNA of a bug yeah, or a virus, as well as what would be the different doses. And those chemical models, which are not AI models, they're really different formulae and simulated as being prescripted to your DNA. And then I can give n plus n possibilities to almost the infinite, yeah, which what would take 100 million years to test mm-hmm. on your DNA, and find within an hour yeah, if that was anything that would give you adverse effects. What we for it would take 10 years yeah, of what would be intensive research. So that is one of the advantages.
Yeah? So huge transformation in fields yes. such as medtech or yes. health, longevity, finance. Yes. So it impacts all industries yes. similar to AI. Catherine, I want to transition also a little bit or move back to AI. The question, how we get impacted, how will people... You know how sometimes we have a hard time dealing with change sometimes in various areas of our lives, but how will people handle this huge shift?
Yeah, and before I get there, just my small little letters on buyers beware. Yeah, with quantum computing, that it will reach a point. Yeah, 2029 is, for example, what some companies in the USA are saying they'll reach what it is, the next singularity, and then a lot of what is the current cybersecurity algorithms and models would be able to be hacked, which could, which is a high risk for the financial industry.
So cybercrime will be a big
whenever
topic.
They will be getting that technology in their hands. So past 2030, it's just why it's so important and want to make that awareness that companies create what is called a post-quantum cryptography strategy now and prepare themselves for what happened after 2030, which is just 4 years from now.
And it affects all types and sizes of companies.
Yes. And then I want to chain it to your question, because it is so difficult to change. And when people say, do I have to make everything quantum, or with AI, do we have to change everything? And I said, no, it becomes hybrid. Yeah, and there's a lot of companies also working on also giving that and democratizing it. Same as for AI. It can be accessed over the cloud. The Chinese even made it for free with their own platform. And companies, what they first need to do is come back and want to understand through all the changes, all the socio-political, economical changes that we're seeing right now, how they need to reinvent themselves. And the bigger the company, the bigger the change problems. And I worked for the biggest elephants in the German industry. Very traditional, very male-dominated, with very classic hierarchical structures. And change could only happen if there were four factors. Doesn't matter how excellent the technology we have, how much money we have to invest on the startups, on the talent. Number one, if management does not become literate about the new technology and the impact on their business model, also the impact that they have on what they're doing and the let's say, the new organization that they need, nothing moves. Absolutely nothing. And by that management, I mean either be it the board or be it what would be the direct top C level, D level.
So tech know-how at the board level and top
everybody.
Management. Yeah.
So with AI, any C level, and that's where I go when I also talk to other fellow C level people, you have to learn AI. It's just like before you had to learn how to use a PC. It's become the new PC skills. Mm. Second, you have to create what would be the training, and the also third, put the change management structures internally. You do have to hold hands with your employees because not everybody is going to accept it. A lot of people are afraid of it. And also they're going to be the ones that want to, but they don't even know where should I start, which is, comes to the fourth point. The training, but also the role change directly map to the business case. And then they would be able to make the change.
So that's also the leadership of the future.
Yes. Yeah.
So get the tech know of this new technology and then communicate it to the relevant decision maker, but also give people the opportunity to learn new AI skills.
Yes, and no matter their age, because that's one thing that needs to stop is ageism. Yeah. That people think, and I've seen that, unfortunately, a lot where I come from in Germany, that after you're 50, you're almost retired. You're not being taken seriously. Mm-hmm. And now we still need a workforce. Mm-hmm. So anyone that wants to learn, anyone that wants to reinvent themselves, they all should be given that opportunity.
So it doesn't matter young, middle age, older, senior, as long as you get the job done, have the knowledge about the technology, you can be valuable in the market.
Yes, yeah. And we need those, what would be the diverse teams, which are very successful, of all genders, of all ages working together. And we see the experiment right now where we have four generations working together at the workforce right now. Mm-hmm. And I've seen them, how they work. And it's definitely a lot of new type of innovation that wouldn't be possible if those teams didn't exist.
And talking about leadership, what would you say old school leadership that is not necessary anymore, that's not relevant anymore, what will change now in the future? What kind of leadership would it require for a company to be successful?
I'll say that we're very careful, because at some point in time, I always like to use the analogy of being a captain of your own ship. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you do have to give what would be someone else and delegate it, and not have to check and be in control of everything. But if there are a storm, if something goes wrong, then you have to be authoritative, yeah, mm-hmm. so that then everybody knows what the change in command mm-hmm. is. So it's become from just not having this hierarchical, static authoritative to being really situative and emotional context correct. So leaders, they need to learn exactly in which situation, which type of leadership to be. They have to learn to be authentic, but they need to learn when they need also to be a servant leader, yeah? Or when they need to be a coach, when they need to move and really be the one, the hands, the captain that's showing the new type of course. Mm-hmm. It's very important that they've learn to face the reality that if they also don't come back and change in their leadership, yeah, those companies will cease to exist. That the moment that we as humans become arrogant and say, oh no, I already know how to manage people, that's when there's a big, huge change that comes mm-hmm. and breaks it. And one example is that of, I'll go back to my first example, Netscape. Yeah? At some point in time, we beat Mosaic, we're so cool, we're the best, they stopped listening. Then came a company named Microsoft and they were selling Netscape. You had to pay for it. And said to everyone, oh, we give you Internet Explorer for free. So then what happened is that there's always going to come someone younger, faster, with a better product, with a much cleverer marketing, and with a much, what would be then, let's say, adaptive team that's going to come and replace you. And we saw it also, it happened to Nokia.
So Nokia.
We've seen this several times. Mm. So some people might not remember that before Netflix, everybody used to buy their own DVD.
Yeah, what was a big company in the U.S.?
Blockbuster.
Yeah.
And they all went
bankrupt.
And then
bankrupt. Went bust. Blockbuster went bust. Yeah.
Because they forgot that number one role in leadership and change.
Yeah. Wasn't that somebody who said, like, always be paranoid or something like that?
They didn't have to be paranoid. But you have to scan the market.
Yeah.
And you have to be humble enough
humble.
To listen and have a strong team. And so all the talent that I hire, I want to listen to what they have to say, because I don't know everything. Yeah. And not even ChatGPT knows everything.
Yeah, especially nowadays. It changes so fast. Yeah. So arrogance is not really a good advisor. Huh? Like, not be always humble. I like that. Towards the end of the interview, Katrin, I also have some questions I always like to ask my guest is if you had to pick a superpower, I mean, next to your current superpowers that you have already, which one would you pick?
I think I remember I mentioned that last time we spoke, but I just forgot. But I think that would be maybe the ability to go in time. I think to really see what had happened and what will happen.
Would you rather go to the future or past?
I think I'll go to the future.
And then if you would buy an audio biography, which one would you buy?
Oh, I mentioned that before. So I think that there is a lot of new people, and there was one that I just recently was able then to find. And this person, she was first an artist and then an actress, but she also sang. But what a lot of people didn't know was that she was actually a spy, working in what would be the Second World War, and then bringing what would be good intelligence in order then to cross the pot for that. But also that lady was also the inventor of Wi-Fi. Mm. And that is one of the aspects that intrigued me very much, that she was able then to have all those different aspects. Yeah, the particulars of, let's say, moving herself in a man's world, in a particularly dangerous world during the war, but also reinventing herself and becoming what would be then a tech genius. Or maybe she was always a genius, but that is one thing that really surprised me.
Yeah, interesting. Final question. Do you have a mission statement, a credo, or some kind of motto in your life that you live by?
Yes. And that one is always when I wake up to be grateful for what I have. Yeah. I always wake up in gratefulness.
I like that. Professor Dr. Katrin Kind, was a true pleasure having you here on the podcast. I wish you all the success and nothing less, and hope to see you soon.
Yeah, great. It'll be great to be your guest again. Thanks.
Capricorn, connect people, potential, technology.